The river is a little high after several days of rain, 2 to 4 feet deep and 400 to 500 yards wide. Wednesday night, Robert Henry says, "A man across the river hooted like an owl and was answered. One of his comrades goes to a canoe on the far side of the river from you, paddles across, and comes back with the news the British camp is quiet, but the British are wakened at 1 in the morning to ready for the march." At dawn, campfires flicker on the hillside across from the island, roughly behind the tower, hard to see through fog that fills most of the valley in front of you. That combines with the roar of the river to block both the view and the sound from the left side. The few American pickets on duty might have been invisible from here. Look to the left of the dam. Depending on the time of year, you may get a better view by walking toward the other end of the railing. The British Army arrives by passing down a wagon road from the left, exact location unknown, to Cowan's Ford, below where the modern dam is. They left camp at the Forney Plantation in time to get here at dawn. The British are led by a local Tory guide, Frederick Hager. They go into the water on this side of the dam's location. There are two routes to the other side of the ford. One shorter but deeper continues directly across the river and is mostly used by wagons. The more popular one, called the Horse Ford, shallower and flatter, turns south partway across down to the island below you. From there, the route cuts diagonally about a third of the way down the right side and then goes straight across the rest of the river from there. Most of the Patriot Guards are sleeping at that location on the assumption that British forces would cross there. Indeed, given that Cornwallis had burned most of his wagons at Ramsar's Mill and the rest were at Beatty's Ford, Hager likely intended to use that landing. Between the dam site and the island, the British march in small groups, called platoons, into the water to help each other against the current. Because the bottom is rocky and deep at this part of the ford, many have picked up long poles or branches they use to probe the bottom ahead of them and steady themselves. On the far side, there is a narrow flat area only 5 or 6 yards wide at the base of the sharply rising riverbank. The flat runs from the wagon ford landing to a small stream and ravine just north of the current dam on that side. Another set of pickets are there. A road leads toward you up the bank and then switches back to the top before turning east toward the Charlotte-Salisbury Road at Torrance's Tavern. Sources differ on how the first warning shot is fired. One story says when Hager and the first soldiers are about halfway across, a Patriot militiaman on the flat either sees movement or can hear them and calls a challenge 3 times. Receiving no answer, he fires a warning shot and begins yelling, "The British!" A friend of Henry's, Joel Jetton, says he is awake at daybreak and hears the sounds of the horses. He runs to the river only to find the sentry asleep, who he kicks into the river. Jetton's powder is wet, so his gun won't fire. He runs back to the camp yelling, "The British! The British!" The guards had gone to sleep with their guns loaded, so apparently he grabs somebody else's and fires it as a warning. No matter who fired the shot, 2 dozen men near the river and at the camp wake up, rush to the riverbank, and open random fire. A small cavalry unit under Colonel Joseph Graham responds from the right, dismounting and running to the top of the bank above them, across the road. By then, the first redcoats are 50 yards out, half an American football field. The Graham Company's first volley thins out the first ranks in the water, halts the column, and scares Hager, who turns back. The day before, Henry had resolved to hold his ground until the British passed a particular rock in the river. When an officer goes by it on horseback, Henry scrambles up the bank. As the pickets join Graham's men, all Patriots begin firing at will, stepping back from the edge to reload and forward to shoot. More militia arrive, so Lieutenant Colonel William Polk yells down, "Fire away, boys! Help is at hand!" Among them is a teacher, Robert Beatty, and some of his students who had been camped at the lower crossing. Beatty has a disability that helps inspire them. As one wrote later in the terms used at the time, "I saw my lame schoolmaster Beatty loading his gun by a tree. I thought I could stand it as long as he could and commenced loading." British Lieutenant Colonel Francis Hall rides up your side of the column and shouts orders. Not knowing about the horse ford, he simply orders his men straight across. But Hall pays for his leadership with his life. A cavalry rifleman takes aim and shoots him. Both he and his horse go under, the horse possibly rolling over him. A few of his men grab his body. Hall is the only British officer to die here. British Sergeant Roger Lamb says Cornwallis dashed into the river, followed by a unit of guards and 2 small cannons. Lamb is with the men protecting the guns and encouraging the men to hold fast to each other and not to be dismayed at the enemy's fire. Just then, a shorter cannoneer lets go of his gun in 4 feet of water and is forced off his feet and immediately carried headlong down the river. Lamb threw myself on my belly on the surface of the water, and in 9 or 10 strong strokes I overtook him 40 yards downstream, close to the militia. I got him on his feet and led him back in safety to his gun. Apparently, the Patriots were entranced by the drama, because while it was happening, not one shot was fired at us. Immediately after, though, they began again a very heavy fire upon us. He paints a vivid picture of the Redcoats wading over this ford, up to their breast in a rapid stream, their knapsacks on their back, 60 or 70 pounds of powder and ball in each pouch tied around their necks, their firelocks with bayonets fixed on their shoulders. It was a bad trip for officers' rides. The horse of the commanding officer of the assault, Brigadier General Charles O'Hara, loses its footing and tumbles them both 40 yards downstream. Later, Cornwallis's horse is shot in the crossing, but struggles the rest of the way across before collapsing upon reaching the far side.
Please scroll down to the audio clip under Patriots Lose Their Leader.